Willard DePhillips, CPA, has over 40 years of experience as a consultant to CPA firms in automobile dealership matters and LIFO, last in, first out, inventory valuation issues. All of his experience has now been consolidated into the DePhillips University, an online resource center for automobile dealer CPAs and LIFO users and consultants. He is editor and publisher of the Dealer Tax Watch and the LIFO Lookout, and a frequent speaker at National Association meetings and conferences, including AICPA and NADA conventions. Will is widely appreciated and recognized for his astute analysis of current developments and for his willingness to share his conclusions, practices, and practical suggestions with other practitioners. Tangible property regulations. Now, Will, back in 2011, there were some proposed regulations, and then just back recently on Friday the 13th, as a matter of fact, September, Friday the 13th, they were finalized. So three questions for you. One, what changes have been made? Two, are they any clearer? And I guess three, are they beneficial?
Okay, well, to answer your first question, Randy, among the changes that have been made are several changes to the so-called de minimis rules for electing to deduct expenditures for fixed assets that have low dollar amounts of costs. I'll get into that in just a moment.
Okay.
But in addition, another change was the introduction of a safe harbor for allowing businesses to deduct improvements that they make to their buildings and to other equipment that fall beyond the normal routine maintenance if the business is a small business. And the definition of small business is where we come into the answer to the question of are these beneficial or not. Mm-hmm. The safe harbors that have been made do respond to a lot of comments that the Treasury received after they issued the proposed regulations. There was a period when businesses and practitioners could submit comments saying that they felt the regulations should be changed one way or the other. And all of these comments have been taken into consideration. Part of that has resulted in some of the changes that we see in the final regulations. The second aspect of this is the tangibles regulations are really a set of eight different regulations under different subsections, and not all of the changes proposed in 2011 have been addressed in their final regulation form. The IRS has reissued certain portions of those proposed regulations as re-proposed regulations. In other words, they haven't quite made up their mind yet. But I will say this, that reading the reproposed regulations for general asset accounts and for dispositions of assets from those accounts seems to be indicating that the service is going to make it easier for taxpayers to make changes. Throughout a number of the provisions in the final regulations as well as in these reproposed, the IRS apparently is easing off of the requirement that taxpayers file Forms 3115, the formal procedure, the formal application. Copies get filed with the tax return. Copies get filed with the various offices within the IRS. I think the IRS is simply afraid of being flooded with paperwork.
Mm.
So what they're saying in a number of instances, which they didn't say in the proposed regulations, but to their credit now they are allowing, is that some of these changes can be made by simply attaching statements of election to tax returns when they are filed. So there's kind of a paperwork simplification that it doesn't do a whole lot for the taxpayer, but let me assure you, for us practitioners, there's a whole lot less paperwork that we have to deal with if we simply can make these elections and attach them to a tax return when it's filed.
Good.
Your question, are the regulations, have they made things any clearer? Yes. Well, you know, in my opinion, they have not really made many troublesome areas more clear. Because what's happened is these regulations really grew out of the IRS trying to resolve conflicts in case law over years and years of special situations that were litigated, costing, you know, or involving hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions of dollars. So these were high-stakes court cases. And out of these cases, there's a yes or a no answer, but then you have to draw a particular principle. Well, what's the bottom line? Well, what they're trying to do in the regulations is really to take these principles that have been drawn from case law and apply them uniformly to businesses of all sizes. In my opinion, for the majority of closely held smaller businesses, these regulations are basically not helpful. They're not any clearer. They have basically reduced the question of how many angels can dance on the head of a pin to the question of how many less than 100,000 angels can dance on the head of a pin.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all a matter of scope and size of the business that these regulations are being applied to. And that kind of leads me to the answer to the third question you posed was, are these really beneficial?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think as one analyzes the changes that the final regulations have made to the de minimis rules for capitalizing, for example, materials and supplies, or for capitalizing small dollar amount additions, one would conclude that, well, the regulations are helpful because if they originally set a limit of $100 and they've raised it up to $200, that's better than nothing. What they have done is said, well, we will allow amounts up to a certain dollar amount per invoice to be deducted. It all depends on whether a business has an applicable financial statement. The majority of smaller businesses do not have an applicable financial statement. That's an audited financial statement. Many businesses do not have audits. They have what are compilations or they have reviews. And mm-hmm. each one of those, audit, compilation, and review, is a technical term of art, if you will, within the American Institute of CPAs and the reporting obligations that need to be made and the assurances that the practitioner gives when they issue either a compilation, a review, or an audited statement. So the requirements have been lessened to some extent, but you must fall within the category of having an applicable financial statement. And if you don't, there is still some favorable treatment, but again, that's going to be limited. In addition, there's a small business exception that the final regulations have put in for dealing with improvements to buildings. And this could be very helpful, but unfortunately, the definition, it all hinges on what's the definition of a small business.
Mm-hmm.
And within that context, the requirement is that the business have less than $10 million of gross receipts. So as a result of that requirement, that knocks out many, many businesses, knocks out almost all of your automobile dealerships, for example.
Wow.
So as a result, that's it's a provision that's there, but it's not going to be useful to the majority of the closely held businesses that practitioners like myself are involved with.
Mm-hmm.
So to that extent, you can kind of give the Treasury and the IRS a nod for being helpful, but mm-hmm. not quite extending that helpful hand as far as many of us hope that they would.
Do you have any expectations then of what will be actionable out of this? What could be happening?
I think what certainly is actionable right now is that these regulations, the final regulations, are effective for tax years beginning on or after January 1, 2014.
Mm-hmm.
Many of us, as soon as these regulations were proposed a couple of years ago, were advising clients of two actions that ought to be taken. The first action was to review their accounting methods for fixed assets, how they are gathering cost information, and making sure that their accounting systems were tracking the information that would need to be tracked in order to determine costs that could be treated under these new rules. The second thing is that, and this is very critical, particularly with these de minimis rules, there's a requirement that there be a written policy statement in effect as of the beginning of the year. So right now, there is the requirement that when these rules become effective for 2014, if the business is going to take advantage of those safe harbor rules, then it must have a written policy in effect at the beginning of 2014. So between now and the end of the year, it's not quite a no-brainer, but certainly there should be written policy statements that are considered. And all of this gets back to the IRS's belief that if a business has a written policy and it follows that policy in its accounting and financial statements to the public, then that's an indication that it is going to be using a method that clearly reflects income, and that would be satisfactory to the IRS. Whereas if they basically had one policy for books and public statements and a different policy for tax purposes, the IRS would, I think, rightfully doubt that there wasn't certainly a leaning in a direction that was not favorable to the IRS. So the activities that can be taken now, the actionable things to do right now, are to really prepare for the imposition of these regulations. In addition to that, what the regulations have said is, because the question came up, what if a business elected to use these provisions in a 2011 or a 2012 tax return or even a 2013 tax return? Mm-hmm. It was permissible to use the rules in the proposed regulations in those tax returns. So in those cases, those businesses have to really review what they did, because if they did make changes to adopt those policies, when the regulations become finalized, they will have to change the policies they have previously used to conform with the new requirements under the 2014 effective date regulations. So again, that's a matter of analyzing what has been done. Mm-hmm. There's one final comment that I think is appropriate here, and that is that for a lot of businesses, when they dispose of building components, that's the one issue or one of the major issues that is under the portion of the regulations that was reproposed and not finalized. It appears that a business can still use the regulations in effect right now, since the new ones won't take effect until next year.
Mm-hmm.
And in that case, in those circumstances, they should look very deliberately at whether they have previously had major building renovations. You know, for example, a replacement of a roof, the replacement of air conditioning units, mm-hmm. things of that nature, which can be deducted, unamortized, or the undepreciated basis of those costs can be deducted as a result of making a change under the rules that are currently in effect, which is the proposed rules. So that's something that taxpayers and their advisors would have been looking at the end of 2011, 2012, and 2013, and clearly requires a close look between now and the end of the year.
Well, if I am a subscriber, Will, and have access to Phillips University, is there some background information you have for me regarding this topic?
Yes, there's a bit of information in at least two sources. One is from the seminars that I did in 2012 on the proposed regulations, because mm-hmm. that provides the foundational aspect of it. I will be doing two seminars this month, this coming month, October, on the 4th and the 9th, and these essentially are going to analyze the final regulations and put them in the context of the proposed regulations so that listeners will have access to both the foundation laid in the 2011 proposed regs plus the changes that have now been made. So that will bring people up to date as far as what can be determined finally.
And if people are listening post that date, it's posted somewhere then, correct?
Yes, we will have that. It's all available through the archives of the DePhillips University in the form of the seminar materials that we have.
Great. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.